Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. Kyle's here. We're here to talk about the Bears. We're going to talk about some training camp. We're going to talk about a quote-unquote preseason game. Pre-preseason game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
No Hard Knocks yet, though. This is a pre-Hard Knocks episode.
Yeah, Hard Knocks is it airing right now? It's tomorrow night, right?
It's Tuesday night.
Yeah, so which I won't be able to watch it then until Wednesday, but because Travis, the birthday boy, had a lot going on this weekend, so we weren't able to record last week, so we're going to do today, and then we're going to try to probably re-record again just in a couple days from now to do our first Hard Knocks recap, review, reaction episode.
We'll be down two more offensive linemen by then, Kyle. So
probably, yeah. Well, we'll get into the annual shambles of our offensive line here in a little bit. Let's start, I guess, on an upbeat note with a big Bears win. Which actually, first of all,
right.
As a Bears podcast, did we acknowledge what a good Hall of Fame weekend it was for the Bears as a franchise? Anyways, I mean, fucking Devin Hester went into the Hall of Fame. He had me in tears, man. He did a couple of some of the things he said.
That's about the Bear that got inducted that had you in tears. Just to be clear, it was.
Oh my God, did you watch the video of them with Mongo? Shit.
That was pretty rough.
Thank God Steve McMichael is in the Hall of Fame. He's aware he's in the Hall of Fame. That's obviously huge. And then I don't care that they're going to put Panthers on his bust. Julius Peppers is a Bear in my book. I claim that one.
It counts.
So, yeah, I mean, it was good weekend for Bears who became Hall of Famers, and then a good weekend for the Bears in the Hall of Fame. Obviously, Caleb Williams and really nobody potentially important to the Bears' hopes this year really played, except for maybe one exception that we'll talk about here in a second. A guy who's making a bid, certainly, to be important for the Bears this year. But also, Travis, did you like that Tory Taylor has already been deemed too important to risk in a preseason game?
We got to lead off with this. Honestly, because it was the best part of that game for me to see him coming out there and practicing holding the tee and running off the field because they knew he wouldn't be making contact with anybody. But punting, like, somebody could touch him, and that's fucking completely unacceptable. I was so excited that they kept Tory Taylor out that I had to explain to my wife football for a bit because I wanted to explain why it's hilarious.
It took
a good 15 minutes. But we got there.
Outstanding.
Yeah, get ready, Bears. Get ready, Bears fans. Will he punt in the second preseason game? Easily the biggest will he, won't he of the second preseason game, right? Will Tory Taylor punt?
Yeah, that's a good question. I really want to know for sure. I thought you'd be amused by that they had already deemed the punter, like, he not indispensable. I got to have... to be clear, it sounds like he has just had quite the camp. Like, it's the first time I have heard of people at Bears training camp, like, lining up to watch the punter. Like, they can't miss TV to watch the kid boom
This is what happens when you – and I understand why people don't watch Iowa. Because it is the most reprehensible form of football on the planet, right? I get it. You don't just turn on the fucking TV to watch the Hawkeyes if you're not a fan of the Hawkeyes. But anybody who has watched them is like, that fucking punter should be illegal, what he does. It's rude.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. He's going to be a fan favorite game one, guaranteed.
Yeah, but as for the rest of the game, I think noteworthy the most noteworthy performance, or at least the one most worth discussing, Austin Booker had, I'd say, a pretty nice night for his professional debut. Because Travis has nobly stuck with his official policy, which is that he will not discuss anyone drafted after round four until they have actually done something on the field.
You got it.
But Austin Booker, you know, we talked about him in the draft, how he was a very intriguing, kind of a late, I wouldn't say late blooming, a very raw prospect in college, but tremendous upside as a speed rusher. And I said that obviously in the best case scenario, you almost see him kind of the way that the Jets used Bryce Huff as just a pure pass rushing specialist, third down specialist. And what I'd heard is that Austin Booker was very impressive in OTAs. There was a lot of talk about him in camp being very impressive, very quick around the edge. But, you know, first thing you want to say there whenever you hear about a guy in OTAs and a guy early in camp is, yeah, okay, can he keep it up when the pads come on? And so far, it sounds like he has. And in that debut game, I thought he looked pretty good. He had a couple hurries. I think PFF said he credited him with like four or five pass rush wins, as they call it, a pressure. And he got half credit for for the sack strip in that game. So I thought he was impressive. Certainly, you know, obviously he's going to have to keep stacking those performances. Albert Breer had a very interesting note today, or yesterday, I think it was, where in his column where he was talking about Yannick Ngakoue, and it, you know, that's basically saying the Bears are still in touch with him. They're waiting for his price to come down, and they're also, you know, waiting a couple preseason games to see if Austin Booker can keep flashing, because I think, you know, at this point, especially given as bad as Yannick was last year, does he offer that much more upside than Austin Booker potentially? You'd have to, I think they're willing to give Austin a chance to audition for that spot where it would be as the third down specialist. And you would assume most of the time on third down, then Walker would kick inside next to Jervon at the other defensive tackle position. And then the two edges in that pass rush scenario would be Booker and of course Montez Sweat. So anyways, what did you think of Austin Booker, Travis, your first look at the book?
It's strange to talk about preseason games, I think, especially this year, because last year was such a definitive statement by the Bears coaching staff that preseason games could not matter less to them. Like, nothing you do in a preseason game could possibly get you on the team. Nothing you do in a preseason game could get you off the team. But it's all about practice, and especially the Bears-Bengals joint practice coming up.
Yeah, that will be interesting to see for sure. Yeah, other performances of note. I mean, I guess shout out to Brett Rypien, game of his life. He was
just killed. Joe Buck lustfully screaming, he has thrown more touchdowns tonight than he has in any season of his professional career. Thank you, Joe. You are never happier than when you are shitting on somebody. Just the ultra backhanded compliment from Joe Buck. Look at him. He can throw touchdowns in the Hall of Fame game. But yeah, I mean, the thing about Austin Booker is, yep, he showed out okay against third string tackles, and he wasn't even the most impressive defensive end on the field in the game.
You know, I thought
Khalid Kareem outperformed him like significantly, and people were like, "Who gives a shit about that guy? We drafted this guy in the fifth round." I don't want to be too dismissive of the guy, but like, we had dudes last season. Right, we had defensive ends last season who, in preseason games, we thought, "Wow, they're really showing out." We had a guy whose name I've forgotten because he didn't make the team. He made like two sacks in a game. He just looked like a dominant force, and you know the team's just like, "We don't give a fuck." So it's all about what he does behind the scenes, and it's not about what he does against the Houston Texans third string tackle who won't even make the practice squad. My take on that. That's very pessimistic of me. I'm not usually the pessimistic guy.
It is. Yeah.
This is unfamiliar to me.
Yeah. Anyways. Were there any other, I think not really performance wise. Is it noteworthy that Khalil Herbert is the third string running back and getting actual carries in that meaningless game?
He did. He kind of tore it up out there. Good for you, Khalil. I mean, it's kind of, it makes sense, right? You have your starting running back now who's this, you know, Swift. He's dynamic. He can catch passes out of the backfield. Probably your first down handoffs are going to go to this guy. So what do you need? You need pass protection running back, right? You need a guy who maybe has more muscle and can run straight up the gut and run over some people. You're not really looking for a Khalil Herbert skill set, right? Which is just, you have to hand him the ball. He's not very good at catching the ball. He's not very good at running routes or, you know, making a guy miss at the point of the catch. He's not very good at pass protection. So do you need this kind of like decently fast running back who can really only take handoffs? That feels like a third string running back to me. You've already got that guy on the first string. You're already paying that guy $7 million a year. What spot is there for Khalil Herbert?
Good question. Well, and then that's like, that raises the question, do you think there's a possibility that we see a surprise move, surprise trade for Khalil Herbert when we get closer to final cutdowns? Like if somebody loses a starting tailback at some point, like do we think there's a possibility where Ryan Poles might decide that a late round draft pick for Khalil is better value than having him there as a third string running back?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what you can get, right? Like, do you think, like, what are the odds that you're going to have to play Travis Homer a bunch and not Khalil Herbert? Like, right. If you think those odds are super strong, should you have signed DeAndre Swift to begin with? You know, do you think Roshan Johnson's just going to explode? You really can't plan for that. So, yeah, somebody's out here saying, hey, here's a fifth round pick for Khalil Herbert. I think you take that immediately.
Well, and do you think it's notable that Roshan was ahead of Herbert in that game and is and got carries and is higher on the depth chart, supposedly? Do you think that's fair? I mean, or do you think that's favoritism towards a Ryan Poles draft pick? Has Roshan shown you enough to move ahead of Herbert on the depth chart?
I think for as much as he's going to play, yes, I think that's what you want. You want Roshan getting the reps because it's hard to imagine where Khalil gets the reps. You know, if you want a guy to go out there like, hey, we're going to have you in on second down. You know, you're going to be in here on second and eight. You're going to be in here, you know, maybe on like third and nine if we're going to do pass protection. Like this is kind of your set. It seemed like they were kind of trying to get him into the role and the rotation that he's going to have during the season. And then Khalil just kind of finished it off. You know, they were like, well, we need a body out there. Somebody needs to play this stupid game.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. So I guess I wouldn't be surprised if at some point we see a surprise move for Khalil Herbert. I agree. It's really hard to find a role for him, especially because he and Swift are both speed backs. Like, it's not like last year when you had, like Foreman had a very clear defined role, even when there was a trio. You had right. Khalil Herbert as the lightning. You had Foreman as the thunder, and Roshan was the third down guy. So yeah, it's interesting to me.
One thing that was interesting, I think, during that game is I thought the run plays themselves were interesting. A little bit of a breath of fresh air there. We had a lot of very formulaic run play calls. I want to say I've been watching a lot of very basic run plays called. And I thought in this game, I saw a lot more diversity and it was getting Roshan open. It was getting Khalil open to where, you know, obviously they're superior, you know, to these third string linebackers and, you know, whoever else is out on the field, the ephemera, the guys who are working to get on the practice squad. But they didn't really have much to worry about. I thought the blocking scheme was a lot more interesting, a little more nuanced to this one than what we've seen, especially from the end of Nagy's era.
It's hard to it's definitely hard to get a bead on stuff. I think they kept it intentionally vanilla, obviously, for a preseason game. But I thought what we saw early on, for that being the first kind of glimpse at the Waldron playbook, I liked what I saw for sure. I thought the like you said, the run game designs were good, the concepts were sound. I thought the play action looks were mirrored to the run looks really well, which definitely a problem with Getsy and a problem with Nagy. You could tell that the run plays were very much, like, especially with, and to give Getsy, I guess, a little bit of credit, some of it was him adapting as he did midstream in 2022, where he was pulling run plays from, you know, the Ravens and places like that. But the passing game stuff was all still not even really Shanahan concepts, but like we said with Getsy, you know, he pulled the bait and switch because he claimed to be like a Shanahan LaFleur guy, but most of his stuff was actually more like Mike McCarthy, like vintage West Coast stuff. And so that was a big problem with Getsy, was that the pass plays, even the PA looks, were concepts from, you know, like a Mike McCarthy West Coast passing offense, but the run concepts were from the Baltimore Ravens. So, you know, you didn't get the significant advantage from play action that you should, because it just didn't look right to the defense.
Right.
So yeah, just encouraging, obviously, first game for the Shane Waldron offense. Shout out to Colin Johnson.
Hell yeah, we got to talk about Colin Johnson.
I mean, you could say that he is the Andy Fantuz of Brandon Rodowes. I mean, that was a...
That's an old reference to this particular phenomenon. But yeah, I think for you and me both, this is the memorial Dane Sonsenbacher Award given annually to the best Mike Haas that we have in the preseason.
Who was...
It's Colin Johnson this year, apparently, who is not, by the way, the son of Calvin Johnson, nor the son of Andre Johnson, who they would not shut up about during the broadcast. He is the son of
To be fair, Andre was going into the Hall of Fame this weekend.
They got really caught up on the Johnson thing. But he is the son. Was it Lonnie Johnson? Classic NFL.
Uh-oh, what happened?
Oh, I was typing. I didn't want you to... Do you know who Lonnie Johnson is? He invented the Super Soaker.
Okay.
I don't know what... Everybody, we've learned something.
I'm trying to... Who was the person... I'm trying to figure out who was the person that Ken Mastrol...
It's Johnny Johnson. Johnny Johnson. That was his dad. College Football Hall of Fame quarterback. Not actual professional football Hall of Fame cornerback, but he did great in college. I believe he played for Texas. So there you go.
Okay. Let's see here.
What are you looking for there, buddy?
It was Ken Mastrol. Do you remember the wide receiver that he hooked up with during the 2002 Kenny Christian. Yes. An undrafted rookie and one of 14 players the Bears sent to NFL Europe in 2002. I just remember that him and Ken Mastrol had like... let's see here.
I love how we've kept this going for forever without explaining it, just throwing out names. There may be some people who don't pay attention to this phenomenon at all. Yeah. So I feel like we should explain that the Bears always have one of these possession wide receivers during the preseason, and the fan base is like, how does this guy not make the goddamn team? He is incredible. Look at how he plays
every
preseason.
Every year there's always one. And it's funny because this is the first year that the Bears wide receiver core is so indisputably good that there's actually not people arguing that Colin Johnson needs to make the roster. Who was the one a couple years ago when Fields was a rookie that had such a good preseason?
There's no way I'll be able to find this here, but yeah, it's something
Rodney Adams, remember?
There you go.
Fields and Rodney Adams tore it up all summer with the second string, and Rodney Adams had a good showing in the preseason. Everyone was like, Rodney Adams has got to make the roster, he's got to make the roster, and he made the final 53. And then do you remember what Rodney Adams did for the 2021 Bears after making the roster with his inspiring...
Sat his ass behind Nasimba Webster is what he did.
Let's see. So he...
looked on as Dante Pettis dropped every pass thrown to him.
Rodney Adams... Well, this was 2021, not 2022. Rodney Adams got one target all season long. He did not make a reception. But everyone was really excited when he made the roster.
That's
because,
right.
By God, him and Justin Fields had torn it up during training camp together.
I, They're going to go nuts. It would actually be worse this offseason just because of the Puka Nacua happening last season, right? Because it finally worked one time for one team. Yeah, you're right. We have too many good wide receivers. It just doesn't matter this season.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, the guys we were naming, I remember Andy Fantuz was a guy. I distinctly remember Andy Fantuz because they signed him from the CFL, and he was like 6'4". And it was during the Martz era when all of the wide receivers they had were Johnny Knox and Devin Hester and all these short guys. And everyone was like, could Andy Fantuz be the big target Jay Cutler needs? And I was like, I don't think so, man, because he was in Saskatchewan last year. Like, I don't think you're gonna find
You know, that's never stopped us before. Not with coaches, not with big, tall wide receivers.
God, yeah. Andy Fantuz. God. And then there was Mike Haas, of course, who was... where did Mike Haas... He was the all-time NCAA receptions leader at one point.
He's the all-time NCAA receptions leader, and he went to Oregon State.
Is he still?
I have, like, particular love for that. I think so. I don't think anybody's broken that record.
Mike Haas.
It was an insane record.
He was... Let's see here. College career.
Didn't he play for the Barnstormers? Despite
only playing three seasons, Haas currently holds many Oregon State's records as well as several Pac-10 records. He was the first receiver in Pac-10 and Oregon State history to have three consecutive 1,000-yard seasons. Holds the Oregon State record and is third in the Pac-10 for career receiving yards with 3,924. Yeah, I don't think he holds the record for all-time leading, but he was signed to the Bears practice squad on September 4th, 2006. Oh, he was in camp with the Bears in 2007 and 2008. So no wonder Mike is so fond of our memories. He got two summers of being that guy.
The record I'm thinking of is he had over 1,500 receiving yards in a season, which is, of course, the Pac-10 record, and will go down as the final Pac-10 record, I guess, for that.
Didn't Roma Dunze have 1,600 this year?
Oh, shit. Let's look. Are they counting him as a Big Ten wide receiver already?
Hold on. Pac-12 conference.
He did 1,640 yards.
Single season receiving yards. The most ever.
Brandon, no way. They must not count playoffs.
Brandon Cooks, 1,730. Marquise Lee, 1,721. Roma Dunze, 1,640. Mike Haas, 1,532. All right. Boy, there are some names here, man. Troy Walters. Remember Troy Walters?
I mean, I remember Marquise Lee.
Juju Smith-Schuster.
He was also a Bears wide receiver.
Reggie Williams. Did the Jaguars draft him in the first round? I remember Red. Yes, the Jaguars drafted him ninth overall in 2004. I remember Reggie Williams.
We are so far off topic right now, Kyle. We are so far off topic.
What topic are we even supposed to be? Dennis Northcutt for the 1999 Arizona... Sean,
we were
God,
talking.
These are some names. Bobby Wade, 2002, Arizona. Marques Wilson. Oh, man, remember Marques Wilson? Remember the steal that we thought Marques Wilson was in the seventh round?
Oh, my God. I'm glad we didn't have a podcast back when Marques Wilson was
the player. Oh,
because
man.
We were way too in on Marques
Wilson. We thought he was a steal, man.
This is the pick of the draft right here.
Yeah. We ran Earl Bennett out of town for Marques Wilson, and we loved Earl. We were like, nope, sorry, Earl. Marques Wilson is the future. Goodbye, Earl.
Nobody gets that reference either. We're fucking crushing it here.
Scottcast After Dark. We're getting goofy up in here. I think the most successful one of these guys, actually, in terms of transiting into regular season success, was four decent games Dane Sanzenbacher had in 2011.
I mean, probably. That's why the award has to be named after Dane.
Yeah.
So this year, the award goes
to Colin Johnson. Oh yeah, we should absolutely, yes, we should make that an annual tradition. Every year we will name the Dane Sanzenbacher reward for Bears training camp wide receiver hero. Yeah, hell, Dane had more yards than I thought he did in 2011. 276 yards. Wow.
What an incredible receiver. Truly, he was a game changer there.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously,
we've all underestimated Dane Sanzenbacher for his whole career.
Yeah, no doubt. Anyway, so yeah, any other performances of note from the Hall of Fame game worth mentioning?
Some really bad performances. Boy, we had a linebacker whose name I cannot pronounce, and I apologize for that. And I'm not going to try because it's going to sound stupid.
Was it 52?
I believe so. It starts with an O, is what I know.
he
was bad.
There was a lot of Madden 2004 zone defense happening out there. It was they were guarding grass. Like, it was a lot of like, okay, well, the playbooks, it's cover two. I'm supposed to be in this zone, and I'm like, okay, but if there is a tight end, like right over, you're supposed to kind of drift towards him at least. There was a lot of that.
Yeah, on that first Texans touchdown, this man, he was guarding grass just really excitedly, and as the ball sailed over his head, he turned around and just his shoulders slumped, like, oh, I'm getting cut.
Yeah,
just nowhere near his hand.
And then, I mean, how much longer do we think we have to endure the Dom Robb experience?
Oh, we should talk about Dom Robinson. I saw a defensive end whose number was 90, and I honestly thought to myself, there's no way. There's no way he's still on this roster. That, like, I thought to myself, they must have cut him. There's no way they would run this embarrassment back out there again. And Kyle, correct me if I'm wrong, it felt like he had somehow regressed. Like, you're playing the Hall of Fame game. You are playing a preseason game that is even less useful than normal preseason games, right? The Hall of Fame game, you aren't even thinking about playing your starters. We got, like, you know, how many minutes of Tyson Bagent. Bagent got one drive, and then we got our third-string quarterback. That's the Hall of Fame game. Dominic Robinson is out there playing against the second, third-string, you know, tackles, guys who aren't even going to make the practice squad, and he is getting dominated. It's you're on mute, but yeah, he has nothing. He has no juice, and he has lost juice as his career has progressed.
Yeah, I compared him the other day. I was like, man, he's like football Benjamin Button, because like his first ever career start, the dude gets two sacks against Trent Williams, the best left tackle in football, and then just at this point, he's just like a sad old man baby that can't do anything. Yeah, I feel like they are giving him so many reps. They are just desperate. Like, they really, like, they were like, please, kid, show us anything at all. And he just can't do it. I mean, he gets blown off the ball on every run play and just gets absolutely, hasn't developed anything even kind of resembling a technique as a pass rusher. It is all still just straight ahead speed rush. That's all he's got.
Yeah, it gave me, I mean, watching him, it gave me serious Michael Haynes vibes. That last preseason of Michael Haynes, where it was just like, this guy is worthless. Like, there's just nothing there. He came in as a ball of talent, and I can't even see that anymore. You're right. He just walks straight forward if he manages to go forward at all. Most of the time, he's just walking backwards. He's not part of the play. My enmity for him is growing now. It's you know how when we did the worst Bears tournaments, there were a couple guys who we were like, ooh, it was really that last year. It was him hanging on again. It was seeing him walk back out there, even though we knew he shouldn't be on an NFL roster. You know, like Sam Mustipher. And that's where we're at with Dom Robinson. I am so pissed that he is getting playing time.
Yeah, if he makes the actual final 53 this year. There's just no good excuse for that. I would be start to get concerned about Ryan Poles and his favoritism towards his own draft picks if he can't write off the Dom Robb pick at this. I think he will. I don't actually think that's going to happen. I think they, you know, at this point there's truly no harm in letting him run out there in the preseason and try to show something. But yeah, if he actually makes the final 53 again, that's last year I could forgive it a little bit because he was still just a second year player. You didn't have major expectations of contention, and obviously, you know, we were still talking about DE4, DE5, and so, you know, because we had the discussion, like, do you keep Dom Robb or do you keep Travis Gibson, who probably offers you, you know, a little bit more, you know, and but doesn't have the upside, really, versus, you know, hoping the Dom Robb lotto ticket eventually pays off.
Yeah.
But yeah, at this point, it's not going to happen. It's not even, there's no signs of it, even if you could see him on the verge of a breakthrough, but there's, I mean, I follow every damn tweet coming out of camp. I follow all the breakdowns and everything. I have not heard Dom Robinson mentioned once in any context. And this is with an offensive line that has been struggling. We're going to get into that here probably right up next.
In a shambles right now.
But yeah, this offensive line is getting beat consistently. You're hearing all about Austin Booker because he is just wrecking dudes. You're hearing all about Montez Sweat, really, given before Darnell Wright went out with an injury. He was really giving Darnell Wright the business almost every day. You're hearing about how it's the summer of Jervon Dexter. And you're still not hearing Dominique Robinson's name because he's not doing shit.
Okay, so we're definitely concerned about Poles. We're upset with Poles if he keeps Dom Robinson. The other guy on that list has to be Velus Jones, right? Where are we at with Velus Jones? Would you get the same level of upset if he makes the team?
I feel like, I mean, Velus isn't even, from the reports of it, he's not even really the main kick returner right now.
And that sounds like Dante Pettis is the kick returner they want.
Yeah, that to me says that they're it's all over but the crying for Velus. Like he's not done any better as a receiver either. A lot of reports of him dropping the ball and everything else. He did come out. When I first saw this quote on Twitter where he said, "I don't feel like there's anybody who can keep up with me one-on-one," or whatever it was he said. When I first saw that on Twitter, I just kept on scrolling because I thought it was like a sports mockery or like an Onion type thing. or one of those people on Twitter love to like tweet fake ass quotes for engagement, just to like rile people up. I scrolled past it until I finally saw someone that actually put the video of him saying it out there. And I was like, you really like you lack self-awareness that badly that you're going to go ahead and say that? And then that same day, there was apparently a pass from Bajent to him that literally went off his hands in the end zone, then got intercepted. And I was like, well, I don't think it matters if they can't keep up with you. One, you still can't catch the fucking ball when it hits you in the hands. It
really doesn't matter that much, actually.
I mean, if he literally was not covered, I don't know that his catch rate would still be better than, like, 70%. Like,
You've got the 49ers backup running back talking about how he invested in a $3,000 jugs machine because he's like, the only way I'm going to get playing time is if I can catch the ball. Meanwhile, we've got Velus Jones, whose whole fucking job is to catch the ball, and he can't even catch a fucking punt.
I feel like it's all over but the crying for Velus. I really do. I can't imagine that he makes it past, maybe he survives the first round of cuts, but I don't think he makes it. I don't think he was making the final 53 this year.
I mean, we can pray. Do we want to talk just about camp news? You already kind of mentioned it. Jervon Dexter, we talked about last week. Oh, he doesn't have the pads on yet. You know, it sounds great, but let's see what he does with the pads on. It sounds like he's a monster.
Yeah,
right
he's.
Now. It's hard to tell if he's that good because the Bears' offensive line is not gelling right now, or if the Bears' offensive line is in shambles because Jervon Dexter and Montez Sweat are a force right now on the defensive line.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely sounds like Jervon. And there's been comments, a lot of people commenting on his. his body type, like the noticeable physical improvements that he's made, said he looks noticeably quicker this year. And yeah, I'm willing to be encouraged by Jervin Dexter's, because again, down the stretch last year, over the second half of the season, he was one of the, he was an effective interior pass rusher.
Absolutely.
Especially one of the better rookie ones. He actually, I think, had a better or similar pass rush win rate over the last eight games to Jalen Carter. So I believe that I'm willing to believe that the leap there is absolutely a real thing. Sounds like he made the necessary physical adjustments he needed to make too. Obviously more comfortable in the system. We talked about how when he came out of Florida, you know, he had to learn to switch to just, you know, the pure gap shooting, attacking method of defense that the Bears play versus the kind of read and react stuff that Florida was having him do. I'm willing to buy, if we were doing a buy sell, I will buy Jervin Dexter right now. I believe that that level up is coming. And all of the observers seem to agree that that is truly what it is. Nobody seems to think that it's purely just a bad offensive line, just even compared to, you know, some of the other defensive linemen who are standing out, just how much better he looks right now.
Yeah, I think there was a nice little dissertation written by a Bears beat reporter. You would know his name, but you sent me this information he had sent in. He's like, here's all that, like, Jervin is looking amazing. Here are the things he needs to work on, like, to fill in his game. And the list read like the list that you would usually get from a defensive end who's entering their fourth year. Not defensive end, a defensive tackle, a three technique coming out of college, entering their fourth year. We talked about this a couple of years ago and a little bit this year during our draft coverage, but when you take a three tech in the draft, you are making an investment there. These guys, it's very rare, incredibly rare for them to come in and be like a real piece on a defensive line immediately. You have to give them a lot of room to grow. It's a very hard position to dominate right off the bat. You've got to be an Aaron Donald to be able to do that. You know, you've got to be a Jalen Carter, a guy who is just an absolute monstrous freak to be able to do this right off the bat. And the list was like, well, he needs to stay low all the time. When he stays low, he's literally unblockable. So it'd be great if you kept your butt low all the time. It's just, he's huge, right? You know, and it was like, he needs to get better at fighting through double teams because people are starting to double team him. And it's like, if those are the things that you're saying, if you're saying more consistently keep your pad level low and get better at getting past two guys instead of one, that's a hell of a list for a guy. And obviously I am all in on the fucking Jervin trade.
So, yeah. I mean, well, and I like last year, even when he was winning again, he won so much late in the down because he's just so fucking strong.
Yeah.
So I don't know that he ever has to be a guy who consistently wins with his first step. Yep. If he can just improve that a little bit, if he can just improve that quickness a little bit, if he can just get if he can fire off the ball just a little bit more often than he does, and then still have that strength, and then, yeah, push through those double teams, draw those double teams.
Yeah.
There's a lot there. Because, I mean, if you're getting Jervin Dexter double teams, and we know Billings is a very tough dude to block one-on-one.
Absolutely.
He did a great job drawing double teams last year. That's going to free up Montez Sweat. And then you really do get in situations where if you have a pure speed rusher like Austin Booker, like that's where you do create opportunities for a guy like that too. So yeah, I'm 100% buying the Jervin Dexter. I don't know, breakout, through just the continued improvement of Jervin Dexter for sure. I'm buying that.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about the other side of the line?
Let's talk about the other side of the line.
Buying the offensive line.
I am not buying them right now. So right now, Darnell Wright is out, and I am hearing that it is serious in that it's not like season ending, but it is serious enough that, like, what I've heard is that, you know, week one is potentially questionable, which is not what you want. Also, because, I mean, yeah, even if he is ready by week one, that's a lot of time for Darnell to miss. And he's still a very young player, and to miss a whole You know, and then and at that
he was
point,
struggling. He has been struggling badly.
Now, I think that might actually be a case where this was an injury that he was trying to fight through for a while and just wasn't. Because it does sound like they shut him down after what had been by far his worst day of camp. So I think maybe we know Darnell Wright's a tough dude and he played through injury last year too, for sure. So I wonder if he wanted to get grit through it and they finally were just like, son, you're getting your ass beat. You're not doing yourself and you're not doing anybody any favors coming out here and getting your ass beat. Let's just sit you down for a bit. So I'm hoping, you know, it's not like red alert on Darnell right now, but it's yellow. It's maybe like a dark yellow, like I haven't had water in a couple days and I just pissed into the bowl and it looks questionable. Yellow for Darnell.
I got to ask the question because I mentioned it to you earlier today. The Bears had already been linked to David Bakhtiari like a lot this offseason. Is this they have absolutely they? Every time they bring him up, it's like, you know what would be a good fit? The Bears, because nobody likes Braxton Jones. Because nobody likes Braxton Jones but us, Kyle. But is this just an automatic pull the trigger at this point?
If what do you
out for?
Where do you play David Bakhtiari? You're gonna sign 30-year-old David Bakhtiari who hasn't been healthy in 4 years at this point, and you're gonna move him over to the Braxton Jones. Braxton Jones is healthy, and Braxton's Braxton.
Yeah.
And he's the one offensive line that people say has generally been having a very good camp.
I mean, you don't move Braxton. We love Braxton here. This is
I don't think you
Braxton
move,
podcast.
Yeah, I don't think you move David Bakhtiari. I don't know. That David Bakhtiari is not. Plus, he's a total asshole.
Do you roll with Pryor at right tackle? Like, what's the plan?
Well, do you roll with Pryor?
We were looking at. Injured Borum.
God, I'm so mad that we're here again. It's not like the interior is even any less depressing because I. Shocking, Tevin Jenkins been in and out with various strains, and even less shocking, Nate Davis is just basically can't be counted on for shit at this point.
The early nomination for this year's addition to the next Bad Bears bracket.
Nate Davis
got to be Nate Davis at this point. Just a dude who refuses to practice. A dude who refuses to be in camp. Dude loves sitting on the sidelines. Allegedly, he is actually injured, but we've heard this shit before.
Well, and like the Bears,
a career out of this.
The Bears allegedly really want to give Ryan Bates a chance to win the center job, but every single day that he has started at center so far, they have had to shift him over to guard because Bates or Jenkins or because Jenkins or Davis or both are down. So at this point, I think you're looking at, you know, a week one offensive line of Braxton Jones, Tevin Jenkins, if you're lucky, Coleman Shelton, Ryan Bates, and hopefully Darnell Wright. If Nate Davis actually starts games for the Bears this year, I guess I will consider that gravy because I am at the point where I'm just writing the guy off. I really am.
Yeah. I mean, it was sort of a quirk last preseason, right? We talked about it. We were like, hey, here's an interesting fact. Nate Davis doesn't do this. He doesn't do camp. It just seems like he goes and he makes up an injury and he sits out, right? And it's not the same right now. It's not feeling quirky right now.
Well, and like, you could almost...
Buddy, you need to get off your ass and you need to get in there.
And you could almost forgive it in Tennessee where he would then go on to play and play pretty well.
Yep.
But he was bad in the regular season last year. Like that little quirk's not funny anymore. Like you need the reps and you need to show that, you know, your job shouldn't be safe to begin with. So that's frustrating for sure. Sounds like Tevin's stuff is minor. No one's expecting Tevin not to, as of right now, no one's expecting Tevin.
I don't think either of us questions Tevin's passion for the game or that he will play if he can play. He is a guy who's going to get hurt, and it is what it is, right? Like, he'll be out there when he can be, and when he can't, he can't. you know, with Nate Davis, it's a whole different thing. It's this guy does not have that dog in him. He is the opposite of a goddamn dog. He is going to be out there when he feels like it.
Do we blame Ryan Poles for not doing more on the offensive line this offseason?
No, I think we kind of celebrated the depth that he added, right? And we talked already about the plan that inevitably we are going to see Coleman Shelton at center and we are going to see Ryan Bates at guard. It might be week one. You know, I think we've said that a couple times. Like, guys, it could easily be week one that Ryan Bates is playing guard. That's the way it is. This was the plan. Now, the plan was not, is Darnell Wright going to be injured?
Yeah.
But even then, you know, if you have Larry Borum playing for a couple games, that's not the worst swing tackle in the NFL.
I think there is a world where they would have liked to have signed Connor Williams if he hadn't torn his ACL. But then I wonder if you have Connor, if you had signed Connor Williams to a real contract, then do you have the money to acquire Keenan Allen? It really seems like Poles faced a choice between spending his money on the offensive line or just hoping to get passable on the offensive line and go all in on weapons and then hope that the weapons and the scheme and Caleb's own natural ability to extend plays and buy time and create for himself will overcome some weakness on the offensive line. There's really nothing to say other than that this sucks and I'm so tired that every year we end up back here where
every season,
2 weeks into camp, and it's like, I don't know who the starting five is on the offensive line and everything that they're wanting to do on offense and practice right now. Because, I mean, it sounds like it. The reports most days, it really, like, the beat writers are pretty, and spectators are pretty universal in that Caleb Williams looks pretty darn good when he's given the opportunity to make a play. But there are a lot of, well, that would have been a sack. Oh, offensive line collapsed immediately. That run play just got blown up, and they have not been able to get a run game going during camp. So yeah, I think certainly I would expect early on in the season passing game to be a lot of quick game, lot of play action. They're probably going to roll Caleb out a lot of stuff that we're kind of familiar with the other guy. I think it's still going to have to be the playbook early on until they feel they have found some combination of that works up front, which fortunately Shane Waldron last year in Seattle faced a very similar situation there. That offensive line was a disaster. And he and Geno Smith kind of worked very carefully to try to mitigate that as much as possible to stay out of it. You know, the only place where you really can't avoid it is when you get stuck in third and long. So I'm sure there'll be an emphasis on a lot of quick game, a lot of run game stuff to try to stay out of third and long at all costs so that the defense can't just tee off.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a guy who loves his 12 personnel, right? He loves having two tight ends out on the field. So this isn't going to be an issue like we've had the last couple of years where it felt like sometimes we just don't have enough blockers in there. Like, I want to believe that we are going to prioritize taking care of Caleb, but it's just like, what can you do when you have this many guys who are hurt? Now, that's the other thing. You asked me if I was upset he didn't do more for the offensive line this offseason. I would say no. He threw a lot of bodies at the problem. But he threw a lot of bodies at this problem over the last couple of years who are notoriously injury prone, right? We know Nate Davis isn't going to play a full season. We know Tevin Jenkins isn't going to play a full season. We know we're going to have a center who is, you know, to one extent or another, a journeyman. You know, he might be in, he might be out. And then we've got two tackles. Are we just saying, okay, we've got two dudes who are guaranteed to get injuries. We better pray that both of our tackles don't miss a single game, right? Like, is that what you want to do going into the season? Was the strategy to build the interior of this offensive line around two guards who we know will not play 16 games the smart move? That's the part that I will criticize Ryan Poles for.
Yeah.
I think you do that to one side of the line, you look at Tevin Jenkins and you say, you know, absolutely, you know, you'll take the risk on this guy. If he only plays for 10 games, well, he's the best guard in the NFL for those 10 games. A guy like Nate Davis, I know we have beaten this point to death, but Isaac Smalo was right there.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if I, if I criticize Ryan Poles, it's not for this most recent offseason. It's for decisions he made in two consecutive offseasons. I still don't understand why they didn't retain James Davis, to be honest with you, 2 years ago. He's given up like two sacks in 2 years in Pittsburgh. He's been a consistently trustworthy part of Pittsburgh's offensive line.
James Daniels.
What did I say?
Davis.
Dad, damn you, Nate Davis. James Daniels, yeah. I don't understand. The whispers was that they didn't think James Daniels was nasty enough, tough enough, etc. But then you turn around and you fucking sign Nate Davis, a guy who won't practice.
An insane, silly thing to say about a Kirk Ferentz lineman.
So I don't.
Also, a guy who went to fucking Pittsburgh.
Yeah, like, I don't understand why they didn't just retain James Daniels that offseason. Other than that, Poles just wanted to tear everything down and the idea of spending money on anybody other than Larry Ogunjobi for whatever fucking reason was just unfathomable to him. Don't understand why they let James Daniels go just to turn around a couple years later and sign Nate Davis. And yes, I don't understand why Nate Davis was the move over Isaac Simalo. We were both circling Isaac Simalo. He was the dude we were... And again, played a hell of a lot better than Nate Davis did last year. And as far as I know,
significantly more durable.
Yeah.
Like you cannot build a line this way, not talent wise. You cannot build it this way because you know that pieces of it are going to break. You can make the reasonable assumption that it's not going to be together for a whole season. And you also can't line up when Tevin Jenkins and Nate Davis are missing. Well, games.
I guess Ja'Tyree Carter is still here. Played actually pretty well in that game, you know, for whatever it's worth. I guess I'd like to have a little more faith in Ja'Tyree Carter as like a real backup guard option. And I thought he looked okay when he played in the regular season last year early on.
I agree.
But when they had a chance later in the season, they opted to play the corpse of Cody Whitehair over Ja'Tyree Carter. So I'm left to wonder, like, is Ja'Tyree Carter anything? Like, I can't have any faith in him as a reserve because last year they showed me that they didn't have any faith in him as a reserve. So that doesn't give me any warm, fuzzy feelings either. So in which case I also, like, again, and maybe we haven't seen anything from Kieran, Amagaji because he has been injured. I don't know when he's supposed to return, if he's supposed to get a chance in camp. I sort of wonder if they're going to stick him out, try him out at a guard spot when he comes back, just to see if they can get some more depth there. But yeah, I don't know that I blame Poles specifically for this offseason for not doing more. I think with the resources, and again, you and I have said this many times, the evidence shows that an okay or even slightly bad offensive line with outstanding weapons is better than a good offensive line with bad weapons. So Poles, I think, subscribe to that. And this specific offseason, no, I'm not mad at him for focusing on the weapons over the offensive line. But that does not mean that there were not significant missteps that have led to the offensive line being in this situation as it is. And you could have kept James Daniels. I still don't understand why they didn't. You could have gone with Isaac Simalo instead of Nate Davis. You could have drafted a guy like Bernard Raymond instead of Velus Jones.
We've passed on so many options at guard.
Right.
So many quality, not flashy guys, not guys who are going to go out there and be a Tevin Jenkins. No, but guys who are just going to be solid, good guards for you, right? You can just plug them in, they're going to be fine. And we just don't have any of those guys on the roster. We have no safe bets on this roster in the interior. It is all, it's journeyman, it's Ryan Bates, and then it's Tevin Jenkins, who is the definition of boom or bust. It's Nate Davis, who is either going to play or not going to play at his whim. And you just, it's just not solid. It's so shaky in there. Who's going to play when? Who's going to go down during a game? Who's going to throw a tantrum and just decide not to play this week? And that's the part of the process that I have to criticize from Poles is he did not consider the entire puzzle for this Bears offensive line. He just looked at the pieces.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to say it for sure.
So we went 54 minutes so far and we've barely talked about Caleb Williams, but yeah, all the news coming out of camp has been, he looks legit. He looks legit. You
know, what's funny is I actually think that's a good thing.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Like I sort of thought, you know, it's actually surprising to me how few Caleb Williams nuggets there are every day coming out of Bears camps, because it's not super flashy. Although, I mean, there's been a couple highlights. I mean, the cover two hole shot throw that he made to Rome Odunze. I talked about how that, to me, that is the most aesthetically pleasing play in football, is when a quarterback hits that hole shot with just, you know, no margin for error whatsoever, takes a perfect ball in stride. I mean, so there, you know, there's been a daily highlight or two, but really just not, just a lot of calm confidence in the kid. A lot of, oh, fucking shit, Travis, DJ Moore got extended.
DJ Moore got, wow, you just right in the middle of talking about.
We should probably say something about
DJ Moore got extended.
We should probably say something about that, shouldn't we?
Folks, breaking news here on Monday, August 5th.
Yeah,
DJ Moore has been extended.
DJ got extended, and that's awesome. I really love this idea that sitting here right now, we know that Caleb Williams is going to have DJ Moore and Rome Odunze for the entirety of his rookie contract. I think that is huge to have basically your own version of.
And Cole Kmet.
Yeah, that's nice. Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, I wanted to bring up. I just made a hell of a face at Kyle. I wanted to bring up Cole because this is becoming a pattern, right? Last offseason, we were like, oh, here's all the people that the Bears could extend, or here are the guys the Bears could go out and grab to really make this team effective. And then the Bears threw a curveball, and they were like, we're going to extend Cole Kmet. That's who we want to keep, right? And everybody was like, running backs can't get paid, but Cole Kmet's out here getting $13 million a year. Like, what the hell is wrong with the world? And then he went out there and he was like, I'm the seventh best tight end in the NFL. I was worth the contract, right? Here we have another offseason. I did not hear anybody talk about a DJ Moore extension before it came across the news feed. Nobody was like, the Bears will use this cap space to extend DJ Moore. And this is what they did. And it is a perfectly reasonable contract. It's a very good contract. And DJ came out and was like, I wasn't looking to be the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL. Like, I watched the market. I thought this was a fair deal. And, you know, I took it, which is an incredibly level-headed approach. Do you like this about Poles? He's just like, you know what? We have extra money. Let's make sure we.
Yeah, well, I think he's. I think it's an important turnaround for him because early on there was, you know, obviously there was the Roquan Smith thing. But there was a lot of acrimony early on about how Ryan Poles didn't seem to want to take care of their guys, but you know, they weren't his guys yet. They were Ryan Pace guys. I think it's, you know, important in DJ Moore to show like, we will reward performance early. We will get this done. But it's also, it's just smart with the wide receiver contracts exploding like they are. You know, as of signing, that was the seventh highest AAV deal for a wide receiver. But I mean, Brandon Ayuk is apparently about to be traded to the Steelers. If you believe Pretty Ricky, the dog in a Giants hat, or possibly the Browns and Patriots, if you were to believe some of the more national. But either way, Brandon Ayuk is either signing an extension with the 49ers or being traded to a team that is almost certainly going to sign him to an extension that will probably immediately knock DJ Moore down to eighth on the AAV front. And then you'll see some deals coming in to, I think, CD Lamb's coming real soon. You know, that'll drop him down to ninth. I would bet by the time we're entering free agency next year, DJ Moore is 14th, 15th, 16th among all wide receivers in AAV, which is going to be super reasonable. And again, you have him. They've got their own version now of, you know, the Cincinnati trio that Joe Burrow has had his whole career with Ja'Marr Chase, with Rome Odunze. I think it's great.
And Cole Kmet.
And yeah, all right. Okay.
But we talked about this last week. It's interesting because we were railing against the Cowboys. We were railing against the Bengals. We were like, there's no advantage.
There's no advantage to waiting.
There's no advantage to waiting. And then almost immediately the Bears came out and said, hey, you're right. We're going to sign our best wide receiver because there's no advantage to waiting. So obviously we have to co-sign this thing. Like, it's an incredible deal. And then, yeah, we got to add in the Jalen contract extension in the offseason, another completely reasonable extension. We told the guy, go out there, prove it. Show me you're the best cornerback in the NFL or at least one of the best. And he was like, yeah, I am. And we Bears gave him a contract, the contract that he deserves. So there really is a feeling that the Bears will reward people who perform well playing for them. And that's huge because one of the biggest problems the Bears have had is would we fantasy pick guys out of free agency and we fantasy trade for guys? Who wants to play for the Bears, right? A lot of this goes into, do you actually want to be a Chicago Bear? And I mean, DJ Moore even said it when he signed his extension. He was like, they told me I was being traded to the Bears from Carolina. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, that was his reaction. When Montez Sweat was traded to the Bears just last season, he was like, yeah, I ain't fucking playing it down until you pay me. You know? Like, that's the feeling you get as a free agent when you come to the Bears. That's the feeling you get when you're traded to them. And Poles is slowly turning that around. He's being like, we'll pay you. We will reward you for playing well. And the next step is just being a good football team. And hopefully that's what we've got here, man.
Yeah, and noteworthy that he was asked, you know, if Caleb was a factor in him wanting to sign that contract, and he said, yeah, I think Caleb's going to be a superstar. So there is a lot of confidence. Bears players are going to back their guy. You know, they were behind Justin, too. But, it's not – there just seemed to be just a very quiet, calm confidence in Caleb Williams right now. And so, yeah, he hasn't been the dominating story every day like I kind of thought he would be. The general impression is like, yeah, the kid just looks competent out there. You know, he's not tearing it up, but you also don't hear, you know, the concerns of like, oh, he looks lost. Like there, you saw with Mitch sometimes, and there aren't concerns about him holding the ball and not seeing things like there were with Justin Fields. So, you know, I think it's one of those things where the quieter it seems to be about him, it might be the better, you know?
Yeah, there was one specific anecdote about Caleb that I found interesting, or at least that I liked, that I found relevant, and it was that Caleb has so many questions about what he's doing, how a play works, and not just from his position. He wants to know how the blocking is working, and he wants to know why. He's a guy who asks why a lot. Why are we doing this? Why is this wide receiver going here? Why is the blocking shifting this way? Like, what's the idea behind the play? That he actually has to – he has split up his questions. His detail-focused questions that aren't whys are going through Waldron, and all of the why, the deeper study of the offense, is going through an entirely separate coach. So they are double-teaming this guy with knowledge, and that's what I want to hear. It's also an anecdote I've heard before, and I have heard it from Baker Mayfield specifically, and I bet if I dug around, I would say that I had heard it about Kyler Murray. And I would bet if I dug around, I may have also heard it from Jalen Hurts, because this is something that is very common to a Lincoln Riley quarterback, because that is the way he coaches his guys. And it's why every quarterback that he has had has been so successful in the NFL up to this point. The dude does not miss, because when you play for Lincoln Riley as a quarterback, you learn how to play offense in the NFL. Most dudes, like, we talked a lot about Florida with Anthony Richardson and how abysmal that offense was. And part of the problem is they didn't tell Anthony Richardson how to play offense. They told him, you go out there, you throw to the first read, or you're going to take off. And that's how we're going to do it. And that is very clearly what he was doing on every play. And when he couldn't take off, that's when he looked downfield. But it was very clearly a, am I seeing somebody open? Then I'll throw the ball sort of thing. They're not teaching you offense too often in college. They want you to play your role. They want to win college football games. And Lincoln Riley doesn't do that, which is part of the reason I felt like Caleb was going to have a lot of success here. So it's heartening for me to see that he's out there and he's like, I need to understand this offense, not just my role, right? It's not a Mitch Trubisky situation where you're like, kid, fake the fucking handoff and throw it to the running back. You know, this is a guy who wants to know why we're doing what we're doing.
Yeah, no, like I said, it's as long as I'm not hearing consistently like, rough day for Caleb Williams, that's a win. Like that's,
yeah,
you know, that's all you really want to hear. I think it's best to keep expectations, you know, reasonable. I think he's going to have a good rookie season. I really do. It's important to note that even a lot of the quarter, you know, Stroud and the Texans started 0-2 last year. Like it's important to remember that like he might not hit the ground running, but it's a long season. And I think by December, he's going to be a really entertaining quarterback.
We play Jeffrey Simmons the first week, right?
Yeah, so that should be interesting given the state of the Bears' offensive line, for sure. And I think it's noteworthy. I think it sounds like Eberflus is really throwing every blitz and every pressure package he has at Caleb to try to – because I think he knows week one that that's what Tennessee's going to do, definitely, is just throw the kitchen sink at the kid. So I think it's good that they're throwing him in the deep end in practice right now and just say like, if you can handle these looks, then, you know, you can handle the rest. We'll get there.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so I think that's good for where we're at. Hopefully the offensive line gets healthy eventually. God damn it. We're back here again. And then, yeah, we'll watch Hard Knocks and we'll be back to discuss what we see on HBO.
Yeah, when is the Bears' next preseason game? Is that
it's next week? I thought
we got the Bills on the 10th. Yeah, 5 days from now, so we won't quite hit that. That's going to be this next weekend, but yeah, we'll go back over Hard Knocks. Any news we get out of camp, and hopefully get some good news from these offensive linemen.
Alrighty,
see you
later, homies. Way out on that bumper's road. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago, and people I show do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving here.